Antarctica, the coldest place on Earth, with an air temperature of minus 50 degrees Celsius. You'd think that nothing could survive here. Yet huddling together, these emperor penguins have evolved to cope with the battle for life in the Big Freeze. Cold isn't the penguin's biggest enemy. This is. The leopard seal, 4 meters long. A super predator. No wonder everyone's reluctant to be the first to take the plunge. Penguin and seal have a relationship forged over millions of years, that of predator and prey. It's always easy to see nature as red in tooth and claw, where predators dictate who lives and dies, and only the fastest and strongest survive. The truth is, predators and prey are just part of life's story. Our world is made up of a vast network of complex relationships. Animals, including us, have to find mates, look after families, and keep up with the neighbors. All these relationships affect how we look and behave. This is the surprising story of how the relationships between all living things have shaped the whole journey of life. Life on Earth wasn't always as complicated as it is today. There was a time when there were no relationships at all. No violence, practically no competition, and no sex. Three billion years ago, the pinnacle of evolution was these strange lumps on the ocean floor. Stromatolites, made up of ancient blue-green algae. They might not look like much, but stromatolites had the power to change the world. They produced the first oxygen in Earth's history and totally transformed the planet's atmosphere. Not only did they generate the air we breathe, they set the scene for all life as we know it today. Because of them, a brand new type of cell evolved, perhaps the most important life has ever known. These revolutionary oxygen-fueled cells spawned our ancestors. They were 20 times more energetic than the older models, and some then discovered that the quickest way to get the extra energy they needed was to steal it by engulfing other cells. A new force was unleashed. The predator. And the struggle between predators and prey has been going on for hundreds of millions of years. As predators find better ways to catch and kill, their prey have to improve their self-defense. The two are locked in an intense relationship which forces both sides to change, because neither can afford to be left behind. nature selects only the winner's genes. The loser's genes will disappear. This arms race has helped shape the lives and bodies of just about everything alive today, and pushed some creatures to extremes. This cricket might think it's on a flower. Until the flower bites it in the neck. It's actually a mantis that's evolved to look just like an orchid. Beauty turns out to be a beast. Other hunting strategies are even more bizarre. Over millennia, the snapping turtle's efforts to reel in a fish have turned its tongue into a juicy worm. Secret weapons aren't the only winning formula. Sometimes more subtle tactics may be needed. Meet jumping spider Portia, one of the world's smallest assassins. She's hunting the much larger web spider. She might be tiny, but she has a big appetite. Her first, direct approach alerts her target, who just shakes the web and forces Portia to retreat. But Portia has evolved a plan B, a maneuver straight out of Mission Impossible. She slowly lowers herself within striking range. She leaps, bites, and leaves the poison from her tiny fangs to do the rest. This time it isn't size or secrecy that counts, but strategy. Portia may be small, but she's as deadly as they come. The relationship between hunter and hunted doesn't only shape the way the predators attack, it also drives the way that prey fight back. Sometimes it's just about using natural assets in a different way. When a hungry raven eyes their chicks, field fares fight dirty. Dropping bombs. What a way to win. After millions of years of predators and prey slugging it out, pretty much anything is possible. The only problem with an evolutionary arms race is we don't see it develop. All we see is the end result. The story of the passion flower vine is a rare exception. Just like any other prey, passion vines are evolving to protect themselves from hungry predators. What makes them unique is that you can pretty much watch them doing it. At home in tropical America, they're under constant attack from lethal predators that lurk deep in the jungle. Heliconius butterflies. The adults are harmless enough. It's what they leave behind that's the problem. Mother butterflies lay their eggs on the passion vine's leaves. tiny time bombs which soon hatch out into very hungry caterpillars. The fate of this plant is already sealed. In a few days, there'll be nothing left. If a passion vine already has a batch of eggs installed, it's pointless for a mother butterfly to lay more. There'd be nothing for her caterpillars to eat. This gives the passion flower a chance to fight back. Today, not all the eggs are what they appear. Some are in fact just yellow spots grown by the passion vine itself as a deterrent to butterflies. But, as in every arms race, not every attack is foiled. So there's pressure for better and better mimics to evolve, and some are now so good, it's hard to tell which eggs are real. False. Real. Real. False. Real. Who'd have thought the relationship between a butterfly and a vine could have produced such a sophisticated bluff? Even when you're safe from predators, things don't always go your way. There's competition to contend with. In Africa, lots of hungry meat eaters are on the lookout for a free meal. A vulture has the aerial advantage of being able to spot the first signs of a kill. Though it won't feed undisturbed for long. Soon every vulture in the area is fighting for a beakful. At this buffet, only the toughest get to eat. Lappet-faced vultures are the biggest bully boys of all. They knock the smaller griffins flying. But a free lunch attracts other hopefuls too. More feathers fly, as even lappets have to make way for the mammal-heavy mob. Like predators and prey, this kind of competition is a real force to be reckoned with. Another influence on evolution which selects only the toughest to survive. Competition is so crucial to animals' lives that it can have a massive impact on their body shape. Many animals in Africa feed on acacia trees. Why don't they fight like vultures at a kill? Because these diners have been molded into different shapes and sizes so they don't tread on each other's toes. Tiny dik-diks can nibble around the thorny lower branches in a way no bigger animals can. Taller impala have control over the acacia's middle zone. But even they are kept in their place by the gerenuk, which has a poise no other antelope can match. Gerenuks look more like ballet dancers than gazelles. They even balance on points. Their specially adapted hips and spines enable them to swivel while on their hind legs. But there's one animal which can feed higher still. up to 6 meters off the ground. It has a flexible, leathery tongue it uses just like a hand to pluck the highest twigs and leaves, thanks to the longest neck in the world. The giraffe. So competition hasn't just pushed animals into developing different eating habits, it's helped create entirely different species that can live in harmony. But what happens when neighbors want exactly the same thing? Ring-tailed lemurs live in troops on the island of Madagascar. Each group needs its own territory to survive, for shelter, food, and a safe place to rear babies. They're often under threat from other lemur gangs who'll steal the whole thing if they can. The alarm sounds. Time to rally the troops. These intruders look like they mean business. Lemur society is run by females. It's they who lead the band into the fray. Soldiers with babies on their backs. When competition gets this intense, the lemur's answer is teamwork. Once animals are driven to work together, the close bonds that evolve can open up a whole new way of life. Meerkats are high on the menu for many predators, so they need to work together to protect themselves. They're one of the few mammals that take turns at doing different jobs. While the rest of the family starts digging for breakfast, one member stands guard, on the lookout for predators. The others can carry on feeding, safe in the knowledge that someone is watching their backs. It's not just lookout duty the meerkats share. When a monitor lizard appears, they all gang up to drive it away. En masse, these little creatures make a formidable force. being such good team players is the meerkat's winning formula. It's all for one, and one for all. Some animals have taken cooperation to an even greater extreme. Certain types of insects, from bees to ants to termites, live together in huge social colonies. But rather than share duties like the meerkats, termites have actually evolved different shapes and sizes to make them physically specialized for certain tasks. Workers are the general dog's bodies, which do a multitude of jobs from finding food to looking after the babies and repairing the nest. A soldier's sole purpose is to defend the colony. They're twice the size of the others and are armed with pincer claws. Both these types have given up the ability to breed. That role is played by just one queen, the mother of the entire colony. She has become an egg-producing machine, and swollen and immobile, without her extended family of servants, she would die. In fact, none of the termites can survive without the others' help. They have become one massive superorganism. It's easy to see why we'd help our own relations, but some animals cooperate with different species. How could that evolve? One answer is found in the sea. A coral reef is a natural metropolis, a city where everyone is trying to get on and make their own way. It's full of opportunities, deals to be struck. And some entrepreneurs are cleaning up. It turns out there's a market niche for professional groomers. Cleaners, like these tiny wrasse, snaffle up their clients' parasites and dead skin. They set up their own cleaning stations, and their clients come from far and wide for dental hygiene or a gill wash. In return, the cleaner gets a meal. Cleaner shrimps, too, serve a most discerning clientele. Fish are smarter than you might think. They have good memories and come back regularly to exactly the same spot to be pampered. It isn't just tropical fish, though, which have discovered that hiring a little help gives you the edge. Some plants have, too. Flowers only exist because of an ancient alliance between insects and plants. Since plants can't move around, they need help to carry pollen between them to produce fertile seeds. So they advertise themselves as nectar feeding stations. As the insects feed, they get an extra takeaway of pollen. It's a partnership that has evolved so successfully, flowering plants now dominate our world. The only drawback is some insects may take pollen to the wrong plant. To get round this, certain flowers have developed an exclusive contract with their pollinators. And orchids, for example, can be very demanding indeed. Some, like this bucket orchid, may seem downright cruel. The euglossine bee needs its perfumed oils to attract a mate. but as he gathers the oil, he loses his grip. Exactly what the bucket orchid wants. It has evolved a complex trap which press gangs male bees into service. The only way out is a tight squeeze via the back door and the orchid's pollen sacs. The pollen sticks to the delivery bee's back. Once free and dried off, surely he'll never go near a bucket orchid again. But perhaps male bees have short memories, because here he is falling for the same ploy all over again. The only difference this time is that he's delivering pollen instead. No question who's in charge in this relationship. But there is another invisible partnership which is even more important to plants, including the tallest trees on the planet, California redwoods. They can live for more than 2,000 years and grow more than 100 meters tall. Although these giants are some of the largest of all living things, they rely on the tiniest of partners which live hidden underground. These secret accomplices are fungi. They penetrate the roots and then stretch out through the soil as a network of tiny threads. The giant trees can't get enough water and nutrients on their own, but the fungal network can. Its massive surface area sucks up the fluid and minerals and transports them back to the tree's roots. And in return, trees feed the fungi sugars produced by their leaves. 90% of all plants live with fungal partners, from the redwoods to the tropical rainforests. It's a 400 million year old marriage. Without it, plants might never have been able to colonize the land. And without all this green stuff, where would all we animals be? The close relationship between plants and fungi is only one of the great alliances that have shaped life. There is one more. You'd need a microscope to see it, but it is perhaps the most important partnership on Earth, because it's what gives animals their energy. Scattered throughout our cells are billions of structures known as mitochondria. Each is a tiny furnace that releases energy from our food and generates the life force that our bodies need. It's a crucial relationship, one that started out in a very unusual way. Billions of years ago, the mitochondria lived independent lives as free-floating bacteria. Then our ancestor cell engulfed one, but instead of digesting it, formed an alliance with its prey. The two joined forces and were transformed. Bacteria became mitochondria, creating a new type of hybrid supercell. A supercell which was the basic building block for almost everything alive today. So there are some evolutionary partnerships where all benefit. But as we know, relationships aren't always that straightforward. Most grazing animals in Africa are plagued by biting insects and ticks. They have what seem to be whole squads of helpful hangers-on. Oxpeckers, insect-eating birds that reach the parts the animals themselves can't. But oxpeckers aren't quite as innocent as they appear. They don't just eat up ticks, they peck holes in the animal's skin. What appear to be honest little helpers, in fact turn out to be blood-sucking parasites. A way of life which is surprisingly common. Take the rabbit, for example. You might expect predators to have the biggest impact on their lives. After all, they're hunted by a whole army of killers. But with predators, at least they can run away. Rabbits face another threat they can't see, smell, or hear. Parasites. Each rabbit is infested with thousands of fleas, ticks, and minuscule mites, which may be small, but pack a powerful bite. These tiny bloodsuckers sap rabbits' strength, and within them, they harbor an even deadlier threat. A fatal virus, myxomatosis, which kills far more rabbits every year than all predators combined. A virus is a nightmare straight out of science fiction. It's an invader with one aim, to replicate. It's made up of special components it needs to fulfill its mission. A potential victim, the outer surface of a body cell. On first contact, the virus docks and merges with the cell membrane. Its inner pod enters the cell, seeks out the command center, the nucleus, and then injects its secret weapon, a snake of virus genes. These then corrupt the cell, making it into a virus factory. Eventually, the cell dies and bursts, releasing thousands of new viruses, and the real destruction begins. Each year, just about every baby rabbit born in the wild will catch this deadly virus, and only one in five will survive. So it's a massive selection pressure. It's not just rabbits that viruses affect. In 1918, at the end of the Great War, a flu virus struck Europe. The war killed 25 million people over 4 years. That's three times the population of London. The flu epidemic wiped out the same number in just 4 months. Against such a powerful enemy, how can anything possibly fight back? The answer is a word we're all familiar with: sex. Sexual relationships aren't just about reproduction. In fact, it's perfectly possible to reproduce without sex, by cloning. Aphids are baby machines. They're all female and don't need a mate. They can pump out new aphids all by themselves. One every 20 minutes, each already stocked with its own daughters. Cloning is great for increasing numbers fast, but it has one flaw. As all cloned babies are identical, a killer disease that wipes out one wipes them all out. The key thing sex does is to create variety. Although these puppies all have the same parents, they're individuals. During sexual reproduction, genetic material is reshuffled so that each sperm and egg is unique. And when the two join together to make a puppy, each puppy is unique too. What's critical in the fight against parasites, though, is that the puppies are unique on the inside. This one might be more resistant to parvovirus, and this one to distemper virus. It's the same for human diseases too. Resistant individuals have cell membranes that lock the killer virus out, so its lethal life cycle can't get started. Sex is crucial. It's evolution's way of ensuring the success of future generations. No wonder animals are so desperate to have sex. Once a year, in autumn, American elk gather to breed. It's called the rut, a spectacle where stags compete for breeding rights. This rut is played out in a most unusual location. In Yellowstone National Park, manicured lawns attract the herds right into the center of Yellowstone Village itself. Here, humans get a ringside seat. Each stag has two aims, to impress the females and to frighten off rivals. Although the males are bigger and more dominant, it's the females who really run this show. As they'll be left holding the babies, they're very choosy about whom they mate with. Only the stags with the most impressive antlers and fighting ability will do, which forces the males to fight to prove themselves. It's a knockout contest where only winners get the right to breed. So over generations, the battles get harder and the stags stronger. Female choice means that sexual relationships can shape the bodies and behavior of their mates. So they are driving evolution. The overwhelming urge to win and pass on their genes can push the stags, meanwhile, right over the edge. Thank you. Thankfully, for other males, there are less violent ways of courting favour. Sometimes it's all just a matter of showing off. So some species put all their effort into how they look. Posers can be just as successful as fighters. Instead of proving their worth on the battleground, these peacocks flaunt fancy dress instead. The females will only mate with the ones they find the most attractive. What does all this ostentation and display actually mean? How can a female be sure she's going to have good, strong, healthy babies? Remarkably, a little finch proves that masculine beauty isn't just skin deep. Zebra finch males have orange legs and cheeks and bright red beaks. The females are much plainer. So why are the males so colourful? To find out, we tried a little experiment. The males' red legs and beaks are full of colour pigments called carotenoids, found naturally in carrots, certain fruits and seeds. Half the males were fed a diet high in carotenoids to make them redder. Then they were put into a special choice chamber next to a duller male who hadn't been fed the pigments. Two males in their own designer bedrooms at the back, one female at the front. The sexes were segregated by a pane of glass. The males couldn't leave their rooms, but the female at the front could move from the left to the right. She could then choose a male by perching by his window. Tiny cameras were installed to record what happened throughout the little birdhouse. The high-speed CCTV footage shows what happens next. Watch the female at the bottom of the screen. She seems to have chosen the male on the left. And the camera in his bedroom shows she spent most of her time with him. While another reveals the other male was ignored. The most popular was the one with the brightest red beak every time. In tests, 9 out of 10 females preferred him. Question is, why? The same red pigments not only make the male look good, they help his body fight diseases too. A dull male is probably weaker and not a good bet as a mate. Brightly coloured male is not just likely to be healthy, he'll also pass on his parasite-fighting genes to his young. So it pays for a female to demand the best. And this male zebra finch has passed his medical with flying colours. But there's an extra twist. Researchers now think female choice even creates new species. This is a zebra cichlid, and experiments have shown that he's a dedicated follower of fashion. These fish are only found wild in Lake Malawi in Africa. What makes them special is that males have a variety of coats of many colours, which is extremely unusual in a single species. Why the males come in so many different colours was a mystery. To investigate, the fish were put in choice chambers. The larger, more colourful males were confined, but the little brown females could go where they liked. All they had to do was swim in with the male they liked the most, and their choice was made. The tests proved some rather surprising results. It turns out even females of the same species have different ideas about what is sexy. Some preferred white males, some yellow, others blotchy, and so on. Which explains why zebra cichlid males come in so many different colors. But how does that help to create new cichlid species? If a group of females gang together and decide that one color is now highly desirable, they'll only mate with those particular males. This preference is passed on to their daughters. Over generations, an entirely separate breeding group is formed, and eventually, a whole new type of cichlid. So what exactly did happen in the wild? Lake Malawi and the other African Great Lakes started out with just a handful of cichlid species. Now they're home to 1 in 10 of all kinds of freshwater fish on the planet. An incredible 1,700 cichlid species. This is the greatest explosion of new species ever discovered, all created by the relationship between females and their males. Whether with families and friends, competitors or enemies, living together isn't always easy. But relationships have been a massive force for change throughout the whole journey of life. And ultimately, it's our connections with each other that have created the spectacular variety of life we see today.